Welcome, everyone, to We Didn't Start the Podcast. My name is Anne.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are sisters, and we are going through the great, iconic song, We Didn't Start the Fire, both versions, and talking about our memories of the lyrics and maybe learning some new things. Today, Kelly has learned rather a lot.
Yeah. Turns out I'm super young and naive.
but full of water, wind, fire, and heart.
Yes.
Today we'll be talking about Captain Planet and The King and I. And we're not going to tell you everything about Captain Planet or The King and I. We're going to mostly share our personal connections and what kind of stood out to us as we were inspired to maybe dig a little deeper. So Kelly,
mm-hmm.
What do you know, if anything, about Captain Planet?
Okay, well, I mean, I've done some research, so I know quite a bit, I feel like. Well, not quite a bit. I know a little bit now. But before this, I had to ask you. I said, what is Captain Planet? Because I thought, if I Google this, I don't even think it's going to come up because I've never heard of it.
Yeah, no, I was so surprised because, like, in my mind, Captain Planet is, like, as ubiquitous as, like, the X-Men. Like, even if you don't read comics, haven't seen any of the movies, mm-hmm. don't care. In your mind, you have a rough idea of what the X-Men are.
Yeah.
But apparently, no, Captain Planet completely faded.
Missed me. Okay, so I was born in 1994, though, and this came out in, like, 91? I think so. I mean, by the time I was watching TV and having memories of watching TV and stuff, it had almost been out for 10 years. Maybe not quite 10 years, but yeah, it definitely, we also never had like cable or anything growing up.
That's true.
So we didn't, yeah. We weren't ones to just be like, oh, what's on TV? You know, let's watch what's on. We had to like plan and have friends record things or be at our friend's house who had cable and, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So no, I never casually came across Captain Planet. I mean, maybe someone, like, you know, mentioned it to me, but yeah, if before now, if someone had just said, oh, did you see Captain Planet growing up? I would have been like, nah, nope, didn't. But what about you, Anne? Do you have a memory, recollections?
I do. I think I've seen some episodes. As you say, like, we didn't have cable. We did have, like, Saturday morning cartoons, but I don't remember Captain Planet as
local
being a huge
PBS,
part.
Probably.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. So it's like, I have some memories of Captain Planet, mm-hmm. and I definitely have a huge, like, it was something people talked about. It was in the zeitgeist. So, like, I knew who Captain Planet was. I knew, like, there were a bunch of Planeteers. I knew the water, wind, fire, earth, and heart joke, and you know, kind of the basic ideas. You know, Duke Nukem, and Hoggish Greedily and Loot and Plunder and all those great names. So, yeah. But I admit I'm not as familiar with it. Like, it definitely isn't, like, my favorite show growing up, but I do know a fair bit about it.
Right.
Yeah, as you say, Captain, Captain Planet and the Planeteers,
right.
Aired it from 1990 to 96. Okay. At some point it transitioned into the new Captain Planet Adventures, or sorry, the new Adventures of Captain Planet. And one of the things that kind of its big impact, I guess, was this was one of the first television shows, especially geared towards kids, that really took environmentalism at the forefront. Like, it was one, like, I kind of feel like it was the thing that made us, like, all us kids first care about the environment. Nothing else was talking about it.
Yeah.
And it was also, like, one of the first shows, like, to really care about diversity. Because back then, and definitely before 1990, nobody cared about, like, you didn't have, there was no law saying you had to have a, you know, such and such diverse
right.
cast. And then this show had characters from Africa, a character from Asia, a character from the Soviet Union, a character from South America,
mm-hmm.
and like, they even, like the black character is voiced by an actual black person. The Asian character is voiced by, well, yeah, no, like, yeah, did you realize, like, 90s, we're still fighting that now? Like, the Asian girl is voiced by a Japanese American young woman who, like, was fluent in Japanese. Like, it's mm-hmm. like, man, like, that doesn't happen very, like, that still struggles to happen today. So it's like, again, this was a show that did it at a time when no one was making them. And I feel like that's worth noting. Even though it's a little cheesy, it's a little heavy-handed sometimes. It's trying to be woke, but it isn't always. Like, mm-hmm. But again, it's trying at a time when it didn't have to.
Yeah, that's kind of what I read, is that for like the main thing that the whole show is about is obviously the planet and environmentalism. And that, yeah, like, while it didn't necessarily have the best way of executing that idea and all, of, like, there were lots of hiccups and stuff, it was definitely, like, a pivotal point for when, or just, like, a kind of cultural shift of, like, the environment is a, there's something going on with the environment, and that's something that we need to address. And, yeah, having something kind of geared to kids. Well, I mean, the idea of having a show geared to kids that is, like, political in a sense, even though I know they tried to not have it be political, more just like factual in a sense, like, this is the environment, this is what's happening. I mean, obviously it becomes political because that's just how the world works. That's just like an interesting concept, because I know nowadays people are outraged when things are targeted to kids or in remotely political targeted to kids. But it was, that is kind of interesting that they were pretty, and that it went on for so long, for 5 years. That's a pretty good run, I feel like, for any show.
For sure. And it definitely, like, you're right, it definitely received its backlash from people for trying to, quote, scare kids in about environmentalism and all the mm-hmm. like. And like, there was a lot of back and forth about, like, the creators, like, I believe environmentalism and caring about the planet is a bipartisan issue or a right. nonpartisan issue, and other people being like, these leftists, like, are brainwashing our children into recycling, like, or whatever. And like, they definitely were not subtle at all about, you know, like, the bad guys, the eco villains are sometimes they're just polluting for the sake of polluting, it almost seems.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I think we can all agree that, like, caring about the planet a little bit is a worthwhile thing to do. Like, to the extent of which, like, is definitely debated wildly, but I think we can all agree that, like, maybe we shouldn't burn down all the trees.
Right, yeah, and I know, yeah, there
maybe
was
we shouldn't.
Something I read along those lines is that, yeah, like, it kind of put down people who work in those industries, because, like,
yeah,
as much as we want to save the trees, like, we have to build homes. What are homes made out of? Trees. Like, it's just how it is right now, and maybe that'll change at some point, but even then, we're gonna have to get resources for those other materials somewhere else, you know, which mm-hmm. has an environmental impact. And yeah, like, obviously we want to do it and minimize as much damage as we can, but the criticism I read of the show is that it made anyone involved in those, like, industries as, yeah, like, bad people, as monsters. It also, like, the villains were, like, deformed, and, like, it mm-hmm. really exaggerated it. And I mean, like, I get that, because for a kids' show, you have to, like, exaggerate things, and there has to be a good guy and a bad guy, and it has to be obvious, because these are children. But when you look at it and analyze it, it's like, yeah, but, like, what if their dad is, you know, like, goes works like, or like on the oil rig, you know, like, we grew up in an oil town.
Yep.
Like, tons of people's families and livelihoods based on these men sacrificing weeks at a time to go work on an oil rig. Like, they are now villains and bad guys, and they are doing it because they hate the planet. And it's like, no. That's not how the real world is. But yeah, how do you, I also would not know how to explain that to a child other than doing it in, like, a super exaggerated way. So, like, I get it, but
yeah, also definitely not good. I think maybe these days, like, the conversation has happened enough that, like, people could maybe find a more nuanced way to do it. Yeah. But yeah, like, and, but it's definitely a valid criticism that, like, back in the 90s, it was all or nothing. It was black and white, good and evil, and no middle, no nuance at all.
Yeah, and, the 90s is not known for nuance. It's known for in your face.
No, it's really not. Yeah.
No matter what the topic, like, just anything is right up in your face.
Yeah, we were full of a lot of feelings in the 90s, and we had to shout them very loudly.
To be honest, I'm so glad that I was there for only part of the 90s, and I was just a small child, because sounds like a roller coaster.
Yeah, I was entering my teen years in the 90s. It was a wild time to be a teenager.
Yeah.
Anyway, in doing your research, what stuck out the most to you? Like, is there something, a fun fact that you liked, or?
So one thing that I looked at was, like, there were a few episodes that really, like, made people be like, whoa, like, we're talking to kids about this. And one was about mind pollution, which was dealing with the issue of drug abuse. Mm-hmm. And what was it? I don't know. One of the characters had a drug addiction.
Yeah, the Soviet Union, her, like, cousin jumped out a window or something.
I don't know. Yeah. I didn't watch it, but that was one that I thought was interesting. And yeah, like, drug abuse, that's a big topic to gear towards, what, 6 to 10-year-olds? But yeah. I mean, it's important. Like, that is, sadly, that's, like, the age kids start learning about it. And so, I mean, it's important. It's not how I want my kids to learn about it through a TV show. That's something I would like to discuss with them, but well, that's fine. But then there was also another one, a population bomb, which was about population control. They did talk about
population. Overpopulation.
Yeah, overpopulation.
And overconsumption and sustainability.
Yeah, so that's what that one was about, was overconsumption and, yeah, sustainability and stuff, which... also an interesting time, because wasn't that, when was the China's one child rule revoked?
Oh, I don't remember when it was revoked, but, like, it was definitely going on in my childhood. Like, that was a thing we learned about, so.
It got revoked somewhat recently, or at least, like, a little bit revoked. Anyways, that's, like, a whole other thing. But anyways, yeah, interesting topic to talk about with kids. And then there was another one. A formula for hate to deal with HIV and AIDS pandemic, which, I mean, I feel like the 90s, that just is one of the biggest things to come from the 90s, is that opening up of that conversation of, like, what is this really? And what is happening to these people, you know, affected by it? And then, yeah, to deal with that in a kids' show is... in a way, crazy. Something cool about that is one of the characters was voiced by Neil Patrick Harris, who is now a very popular man. I don't know if he was early 90s, but good for him and the other people involved.
Well, he was a child actor, so Doogie Howser. So
oh yeah, okay.
So he would have been fairly well known.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know Doogie Howser. Never seen Doogie Howser. Don't know.
I actually haven't either. So. Okay.
But anyways, yeah, really interesting topics to be in a kid's show, I thought. All of them are, like, yeah, like I said, things that, like, I feel like kids should learn about, but maybe in a more conversational way, instead of just, like, one idea being, like, this is this situation, you know? But kind of, like, the whole idea of environmentalism is, like, it's kind of shown in this, like, this is the problem. Or they have, like, a whole catchphrase that's, like, be the solution rather than the problem. Or rather than the pollution is how they say it. Be the solution rather than the pollution. But, yeah, but I think these are topics that are so complicated that... Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's great because I'm sure for a lot of people it opened up, like, an avenue for a conversation. Like, hey, Mom, I saw this episode. They talked about this, and hopefully that mom was like, oh, let's talk about that more, and, you know, opened up. That's how our mom would have responded. But I also know for some, their responses would probably have been like, yeah, whatever, or how dare they talk to you about that on a kid's show? Or, you know, I can see
right, yeah,
all kinds of different moms I know reacting very differently to hearing that their kid saw something about AIDS on TV. Even nowadays, I feel like I know lots of moms that would be outraged that their kid's show mentioned, even like indirectly hinting at AIDS, would be like, whoa. Right.
It's kind of interesting, like, because, like, maybe 5 or 6 years after this show ended, no, because 1992, so, like, the A Formula for Hate aired in 1992, mm-hmm. and maybe just, yeah, about 5 years, five or six years later, my school actually had a gentleman with AIDS come talk to us, and he kind of just mm-hmm. talked about what life was like and how many thousands of medicines he had to take just to stay alive. And like, like, bless him, because I'm sure at that age we did not, like, we had so many questions, but probably none of the tact.
I hope it's not happening in, I mean, every generation I'm sure has like their own jokes, but I know when I was a kid, like in elementary school, like, AIDS was just thrown around, like, some, just the butt of every joke was like, oh, they probably have AIDS, you know, or like along the lines with like, oh, that's gay. Like, it's just stupid thing that kids said. And so,
A lot of work had to be done to like really understand, like, first of all, that it wasn't contagious and like that these people are just regular people. Like, it's not not happening because they made bad choices and they're bad people and they deserve to, like, it's because it's a disease and it happened. And
just the courage people had to have had at that time to talk about it or to admit that they have it with, like, mm-hmm. just because, just the way people joked about it and stuff was so,
and, like, and that the healthcare just wasn't there. Like, it was there, but they had no access to it.
People just didn't respect that illness, and it led to more people dying because of it, which is horrible.
Yeah, and misinformation, and and then the overpopulation and overconsumption, like, this came right out of the 80s, which was kind of known for its culture of consumption and buy more and, like, kind of sprawling buildings, you know, so it's kind of like all these, and then I think drugs have always been something they talked to us about in school.
Yeah, when did the war on drugs start? That was long before, though, right?
I don't remember when that started, but, like, yeah, I feel like that's something every student can relate to. Like, so, like, these were all very topical things that I feel like, if our parents maybe weren't talking about them with us, but I feel like we all knew about them in a way, you know?
Yeah, it just, from whatever, just from conversations or, I don't know, media, I guess, at that time, whatever media you consumed.
Things that could be, like, very scary for kids to kind of encounter in that, like, passive way, or of like, I heard the adults talking about this, or I heard this thing on the news, but I don't have all the information, so it, like, so, you know, we just start saying things, and then it turns into some, like, a very scary world. And I really, like, even though I don't necessarily enjoy watching Captain Planet as an adult, like, I do appreciate that it kind of, as you say, like, be the solution. Like, it powered all these young people to, like, have empathy and to feel that they could make a change and to feel like they could tackle these big things affecting the world and, like, make it a little better. Like,
the fact that they tried, I really, you know, the creators, that they, like, went out there and they tried and they went for it, you know, to, like, create this show. Like,
they really went for
it. Kudos to you. And, like, something it made me think about is, like, I don't know, I feel like nowadays people are super sensitive, especially with kids and, like, what's being fed to kids through media and stuff. And, like, I think that is important. Like, there's so much garbage out there that, you know, kids don't need to know about or whatever. But, like, at the same time, like, these are things that are around them and that they do need to, like, be aware of to some degree. And, like, I think somewhat recently, there was there was an episode of Arthur where I want to say it was two guys get married, And people I've heard about that, yeah. were outraged, you know, losing their minds over this kid show. But from what I understand, it wasn't them being like, look at this gay marriage happening and like, you have to support this. But it was just like a casual thing, like, oh, someone's getting married, there's a wedding, you know, and like it was just casual. And there was another one where there was like Sesame Street had like a gay couple come on. And yeah, it wasn't like, we're gay and that, you know, like explaining
and,
it or anything.
And you have to be, and we're going to indoctrinate
right.
you.
And it's, like, this is what it is, and this is how we have sex. Like, it's not like.
Right, yeah. Like, no
one's. It's a crazy thing. It's just like two people in the background, casually holding hands, happen to
existing.
Be the same gender. You know, like, right. they do it in a super subtle way. And, like, I appreciate that because, yeah, like, my kids are going to grow up seeing that, and they can't think it's like. Crazy to see that, or you know, like, and they can yeah, believe whatever they want to believe about whatever, but they do need to like casually coexist with other people, and those right. are other people in this world. And so yeah, it's like I appreciate the way certain kids shows do kind of do modern day problems like that without yeah. it being like we're gonna talk about this. And so, like, I haven't seen Captain Planet and how they handle it. I feel like there are certain things that maybe they were a bit more blunt with. But
yeah.
at the same time, I also do, like, give them props for trying because I can't, like, it would have been so scary. And yeah, I feel like if any TV show tried to do this now, like, they would be instantly shut down. Like, the Karens would be out there being like, we cannot let this show air. This is going to, what are they? Or there would be, like, when the... There was a drag queen doing story time at the library, you know, like people yeah. would be crazy about it. But yeah, for me, I would see it as a great time to sit with my kids and watch it and have these conversations if it is something that's on their mind. But I don't know.
Yeah, no, I definitely like you having kids is probably a much better perspective than I had. I definitely think like. It's difficult to find ways to, I don't know, talk to children about things that are important, but in a way and at a time that is age appropriate.
Yeah. That's the hardest thing, age appropriate. It's like, what does that mean?
Yeah, like, when are our children ready to hear about, like, sexual assault? And when are we, when right. is it better to be teaching them about the uh-oh feeling? Or, you know, like,
right. and like
those are difficult things to, and, like, as a parent, you kind of just got to do your best, I
right.
assume.
Some kids are, unfortunately, are going to experience those things before they're taught about
right,
that.
Right, before they're, yeah.
Yeah, and then sometimes they'll be taught about it. And then never experience that or, like, you know, go their whole lives without needing that information. And so it's so hard to say, like, this is the age we have to start targeting these ideas to and stuff yeah. like that. And it's, I don't know, it's tricky with kids, but.
Yeah, I feel like my memories of Captain Planet, like, was a bit, they were a bit hit and miss. Like, I don't ever feel they were age inappropriate
yeah.
in anything they presented. I definitely don't always feel that they, like, were always super deft with their presentation
right.
of everything. But, like, I never felt in anything I watched or read about, like, anything they presented was something a kid was not prepared to handle. Like, the fact is,
mm-hmm.
people have diseases and sicknesses. And,
yeah.
maybe the overpopulation one. Maybe that
From
would
what
scare
I've
a kid.
Read, like,
but
in general... Yeah, it's like they handled these situations, like these topics pretty well, as kind of disguising them as other situations in a way,
mm-hmm.
like disguising
yeah.
the whole environmentalism thing as like, there's a bad guy, which I mean, it has its own problems with creating this
right.
intense bad guy who's out to hurt the planet. But by doing that, you make it a way where it's consumable for kids and there is a slight... I think overall, like, Captain Planet had a positive impact on the kids who watched it, you know,
mm-hmm.
consistently presented. Just, yeah, so it is, I don't know, it's hard to, tackle those kinds of topics, but they did it. And overall, I know it wasn't, like, a rounding success. And yeah, I feel like, from what I've heard, those who watch it now are like, this show is very mid, like, not very well produced. And, you know, like, it's not an amazing, you know, Marvel movie or anything, but
But yeah, the reviews I read of it, as you say, like, pretty positive. Like, there's definitely the occasional person who's like, this is the worst show ever made, or they were so preachy. But most people, like, remember it positively. And, like, even though it was so cheesy, like, it, you know, it, like, it really made... I really remember, have a lot of good memories, and it made me think.
What kid show isn't cheesy? I want you to give Okay, Bluey. I would say Bluey is not cheesy. But any other
Bluey
kids
is not
show,
cheesy, but it's definitely, yeah.
All cheesy, so I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the best reviews was a person from, I think he was Ghana, but he talked about, like, how... in his community, like, how loved Captain Planet was. Mm. And one of the reasons was it featured a young man from Africa and who had a perspective on environmentalism that was kind of very authentic to the, an African region. And, like, because they would have a very different perspective than an American would at the time. And all the characters were based on people the creators, like, actually knew. And their relationship to environmentalism. So it had a bit of authenticity to it. And like, so again, people who watched it generally reviewed it, remember it positively, but it also like created the Captain Planet Foundation.
Right. Or, oh, I read about that too. Yeah. Where like a chunk of the proceeds from each episode went to like an actual foundation that went on to help the environment.
Yeah, and to kind of like educate young people and like to present environmental projects to the foundation and receive seed money to grow those ideas. And yeah, and that still exists today, that the Captain Planet Foundation, and they still do stuff online and in person to kind of just reach out and get people thinking about the environment and what we can do to create positive change around us.
I have a bit of trivia for you.
Okay.
Captain Planet is scheduled to release in the United States and Europe on November 15th of 2024. They're making a movie, apparently.
Oh my gosh. How fun. How wild.
I know. I'm trying to like read up a little bit on it. I'm like, who's making this? When? What? Since
I am very interested to know who the target audience is, because like because that will define like the tone of this movie and like how deep they're going to go into environmentalism. Because if it's like an adult that, you know, sometimes they do that kids property, but they like make it super adult, like.
From the supposed trailer poster, it looks very Superman, like new modern day Superman.
Okay.
But I don't know who's making it or can't find too much information on it, so.
Interesting. What? Sorry, was that, what was your trivia question?
Or... Oh, well, that was just my bit of trivia that they're making a movie.
Did you know?
Did you?
I did not know. I'm very excited now.
Yeah.
I mean, I would definitely go see it. I would be very interested in what a Captain Planet vehicle had to say today, I guess.
Okay, I'm on movieweb.com, and it claims that Captain Planet movie is still happening, so I don't know when this idea came out, but, and it's gonna
I assume the writer's strike knocked everything back.
Oh, that's
so
true. It's gonna have one of the Top Gun Maverick stars, Glenn Powell. Or wait, no. I don't know if I'm reading that right. Yeah, Glenn Powell is eager to bring Captain Planet to the big screen alongside producer Leonardo DiCaprio, who is a well-known environmentalist. So,
okay.
We'll see.
How fun.
Leo. Maybe he was influenced by it as a child.
He
wouldn't have been a child, but in the 90s, he would have been at least a teenager, right? Or something?
Titanic was what, 94?
Oh, maybe.
He was very, a young man.
A young man, yeah.
19?
Maybe this is where his passion started for environmentalism. He watched Captain Planet. Anyways. Yeah. We'll have to watch the extended bonus features to see.
Yeah, Captain Planet, though, star-studded cast. Like,
yeah,
Whoopi Goldberg as Gaia, and, like, Jeff Goldblum's in there, Meg Ryan's in there, LeVar Burton, our Reading Rainbow guy. Love him.
Yeah. Yeah, they went all so out, many. Which is cool.
Sting. Sting was in.
Yes. Quality. He's known for his acting.
All right. Any final thoughts on Captain Planet?
No, not really. Can't wait to see the movie.
But if you had a planeteer power, would you choose earth, wind, water, fire, or heart?
Not knowing what any of those actually do, I guess I would say heart. Just because I feel like if I had any of those others, I would mess up the world more somehow. Like, I would put too much water and now all the fish are dead and what are we going to do? Or I burned too many trees and now there's not enough. Or, you know, like, I would mess up the world worse somehow. But heart feels like a more internal thing. And while I probably would mess up people emotionally, they could bounce back from that. You know, someone else can teach them better, but I can't save the world.
Oddly enough, my answer was the same. Like, I kind of wanted heart. Like, I feel like, we could all use more empathy for sure, but mostly because my default answer, like, I want the power of fire, but I know the second you give me power to burn the world down, I will burn the world down.
Yeah.
So it's like, I shouldn't have the power. I should have the power of empathy.
yeah, exactly. I can't be trusted with the other real powers.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to The King and I. Yeah. Another one where you feel a little bit...
yeah.
Less than.
So that came out way beyond my time. And I mean, that's like no excuse, but I don't know if we ever had it growing up.
This is why it's surprising me, because we absolutely had this growing up and we watched it frequently.
So, okay.
Did we stop watching it when you came around?
I have like the vaguest memories of watching it. Not enough to, like, be able to tell you the plot, even in the slightest. Right. But I feel like our mom is the one that would have introduced us to a lot of these kinds of things. And her and I's, like, old movie was My Fair Lady. That's the one we watched all the time. Okay. And so, like, if she wanted to watch a musical with me, we were watching My Fair Lady. We weren't watching The King and I. So maybe that
I hardly ever watched My Fair Lady with her. So, maybe.
Well, watched it so many times.
Yeah, so, like, maybe, like, that we each had weird our own period of my high school where I was, like, not talking to any of you, and then I moved out to go to college, and you were coming into your own as a human.
Yeah, we were
like,
watching
My Fair Lady. Like, maybe that's, you moved on to My Fair Lady.
King and I was done. We'd moved on.
We were Sound of Music and King and I and all the Pride and Prejudices ever.
Yeah. Yep. Well, yeah. Just moved the King and I to My Fair Lady and same childhood.
We got it. Okay. How did we grow up in such different houses?
I do have more memories, I think, of the animated version.
Interesting.
Probably just because... Actually, I have no idea why, but...
Well, I do remember that we watched it, like, we rented it as a family at one point, just for kicks.
Yeah, maybe I just, that just stuck with me more.
Yeah, no, I watched this movie a lot. I, with mom, with the family, I can quote this entire movie, and I have no regrets on that.
Great.
not that this musical is necessarily perfect, but I do rather love it a lot. The King and I, it is a musical based on a novel, based on some diaries, from, a woman named Anna Leon Owens, who, was a governess to the children of the King of Siam in the 1860s. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the plot is basically she goes to Siam to teach, the king's kids, at a time when, England and other European powers are trying to colonize the world, and the king is very interested in keeping Siam's independence. It doesn't want to be a colony of England or France or whoever. Mm-hmm. So his way to go about that is to try to educate his royal family in, and you know, the influential people in the kingdom in Western ways. Mm-hmm. Get them all able to speak English, able to understand Western people. And then in her living and teaching in the palace and interacting with the king over these political things, they kind of influence each other and change each other. And as I said, it's based somewhat loosely on a real story, mm-hmm. Which is wild.
So one thing that I thought was kind of funny is, so yeah, the king hired a governess. That's like legit. I mean, he had someone else do it for him, I think, because, you know, yeah. He's the king. and so, yeah, they found this like British nanny to come, and they wanted, like, he specifically, I think, sought out like a British nanny kind of idea, or not yeah. nanny, but like.
A teacher of some yeah. kind.
And so, yeah, they had Anna Leowens, but she was not like full British. She was Anglo-Indian. Her father, she was the daughter of a member or soldier of the Indian Army. So she like hid the fact from them that she wasn't even like fully British. Anyways, I just thought that was
yeah, like that hadn't necessarily been born in England, right. Raised in England. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, we want the Western influence, and then they got someone that's not like, I don't know. They just kind of found someone. I mean, she clearly worked out and did her job and all that, but just kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely was the more British side of India for sure. But...
Yeah, and she like, they at times commented on her like darker, slightly darker complexion, and she had stated that it was because she was Welsh by birth or something. Like she, yeah.
Like, that is just the wildest. Right. Yeah, I know I have. I'm Welsh. Like,
it's because of my Welsh.
That's like, do you remember that Lilo and Stitch, like, TV series where the alien was like, I'm Samoan? And everyone's like, oh, yeah, sure. I see it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you look at you. You're so tall and not human. Like, well, I'm yeah. Samoan. And you're like, yeah.
Her deception was not detected. Until long after her death and long after the book came out and stuff. But I just thought that was kind of funny. They just lied yeah, no, on her it's... resume a little bit. I'm just going to fudge some numbers here.
I'm you know, as an actor, I get it. Like, yes, I can ride a horse.
Yeah, yeah, I'm fully qualified. And she probably was fully qualified. I doubt it made a yeah. difference. But at that point in time, just, I'm sure yeah. what they were looking for was... A pure blood, if you know, like, you know, like someone.
Yeah, yeah, someone who is like Britishy, right. British,
not Anglo-Indian.
But it maybe it helped her out in the end. Like, like I'm sure as you know, a mixed race child living, mm-hmm. you know, in India or having a father who had served in India probably gave her a slightly different perspective.
Oh yeah,
than many average British people had.
Right, especially, yeah, about the colonization stuff going on. And
yeah, and maybe she was better able to communicate with the children she was teaching and the palace mm-hmm. staff and the king. And so, yeah.
All right, so why do you think the king and I, as, like, I assume they're referring to the musical, not, like, the actual happenings. Why do you think right. that was, like... Yeah, so impactful that it was in the Billy Joel song.
Right. So this was a movie that, like, was such a hit. Like, when it was a play, it was a hit. It ran, like, it was the fourth longest Broadway musical at the time. It had so many revivals. Yeah. Yul Brynner became, like, synonymous with this role. And then the film came out, and like doubly so, and it's just a play that has like stood the test of time. But also it was a play that, like, a play and a movie that talked about race and the results of colonization and like a lot of really heavy and topical topics. Like, I mean, I say topical that weren't being talked about very much. Mm. Like, this play was produced on Broadway in the 1950s. Like,
yeah,
we were still in segregation laws, and it's talking about Uncle Tom's Cabin, which it can be a bit of a problematic book sometimes, but, like, again, is talking about anti-slavery. And mm-hmm. it's talking about, like, the racism between Siam and Burma. And it's talking about the pros and cons of westernization of the Asian world. And, like, a lot, and, you know, people of different cultures, like, trying to communicate with each other and trying to do their best for each other. So it's, like, it was a lot of things that were like such great talking points that, you know, gave people a lot of big thoughts and ideas, but also it was so well staged. It was so well choreographed. It was like the actresses, let's mm-hmm. see. Well, Yul Brynner, like I said, synonymous with this role, but the original actress for the Broadway play was Gertrude Lawrence. Phenomenal, like, really was able to, like, launch a small moment right. in history with this role. And then Deborah Kerr, like, phenomenal. She is so great in this role. And, like, the costuming is beautiful. And I've never read Uncle Tom's Cabin. I don't think mm-hmm. I, like, knowing some of the controversy around it, I don't think I want to. I think I'm happy to get the Cliff Notes version from this incredible ballet that is put on to tell the story. And like, the choreographer and one of the lead dancers, or sorry, one of the lead dancers who eventually went on to do some choreography, Yuriko, in one of the major Broadway revivals, Yul Brynner basically had, he says, I'm gonna do this and I want you to direct it, which for an Asian American woman was a huge thing. Like, that's a huge thing today. To mm-hmm. to be able to direct a Broadway show. And, like, that, it, like, this launched a lot of people's career and the career of a lot of people of color, even though you can also hit it with all the same criticism of the fact that at that time, casting for an Asian role meant you could be anything that wasn't white. So, like, there are black people in the background playing the Thai people, the Siamese people. There are Mexicans. There are basically every race that isn't white, if you have a bit of a tan. So, yeah, like, I think this was just a movie that on many different levels was able to affect people, like, both the visually and just the fact that it's a great play with great music, culturally, because it touches on so many cultural issues. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was something that I was reading, too, is that, yeah, lots of people, there were people that loved it for, like, the romance. People, yeah, who loved it for, like, this cultural experience. And yeah, there was a lot of, like, feminism and
yeah.
The addressing of, like, sexism, because there's this huge, like, power dynamic between the two. And that was kind of, like, a new thing to see at that point in time. And so that was, yeah. like, a big one, I know.
Yeah, watching the woman who plays Anna and the king going head to head in every scene and, like, truly being equals and, like, both as actors and as characters is truly something wild to see. Like, they are so good at it. And mm-hmm. like, when you, and it's like, not that I don't love other Rodgers and Hammerstein plays, but that's definitely not how I feel about Oklahoma. You know, that's not how I feel about Carousel. The way that these two yeah. stand as equals is just truly phenomenal.
Yeah, kind of on another touch, I saw that, like, some of the criticisms of it were that, like, most musicals at that time were very, like, comedic. Mm-hmm. And then to have this one where it's a lot, of seriousness, I guess. There were people that didn't like how it didn't have as much humor as some of the other ones, and they were like, it's too much. Or, it, I don't know. And
right.
People liked the more humorous musicals of the past, I guess. Mm-hmm. And but there were very few, like, those weren't super popular opinions, I don't think. But just some of the criticisms that I saw.
Yeah, well, and that kind of ties into Rodgers and Hammerstein. It was really with Oklahoma, because that I think that came first. But, like, they kind of came on the scene in musicals at a time when musicals were sort of transitioning from, again, very vaudeville, very comedic, very, you know, my lead actor or actress goes down to the front of the stage and belts out their tune facing the audience, to two actors having a very soft scene together about, like, sad feelings or something. And, right. Like, they were kind of on the forefront of putting all that together. And, like, we can tell a story through the music, and it can be nuanced and high and low, and it's not just about, like, a bunch of sketches tied together with string. Mm-hmm. And definitely The King and I is kind of part of that legacy.
Yeah. I think for me, the thing that I, like, vaguely remember the most from The King and I is definitely the music. Like, when someone, if I were to hear a song from them, like, or from the movie or the play, like, I think I would maybe be able to identify that it was from The King and I. And at first I didn't know that it was by Rodgers and Hammerstein, or Hammerstein, however you want to pronounce it.
I'm honestly not sure what is the proper way, but
but anyways, when I, like, saw that it was from them, I mean, and I know they are the ones that did The Sound of Music, which is,
yes,
I mean, just, like, perfection, in my opinion. Like, just so good. And that, I think that's a great movie with, like, seriousness and a touch of, the occasional touch of comedy, I guess. I think they're very similar in how they're, like, addressing very big problems, and I think I was reading that Rodgers and Hammerstein, at first they were like, they weren't sure if they wanted to do the music because they weren't sure how, like, a story like that could be made into a musical. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like a big struggle. And then I think, yeah, once they kind of saw, like, there's this love dynamic, they can kind of lean into that. And then, you know, they eventually, obviously, they tried it out and, yeah, we're wildly successful and did a great job.
Yeah, for sure. Like I just love this whole thing so much. And I think it's kind of similar to what we just said about Captain Planet, in that it was trying to be woke in a lot of ways at a time when no one asked, which is why you kind of give it a pass when you realize that by today's lens, some of its treatment of Asian culture is not as woke as we'd like. It is.
Well, I'll tell you, the 1999 animated adaptation of it, extremely, I wouldn't go full on racist.
Oh no!
But the racial stereotyping that you're hit with at the beginning is, wow, something else. And then, yeah, the kind of whitewashing of the king is very interesting. But yeah, just the sorcery and magic that they added. And then, yeah, just these, like, really, like, trashy, racial profiled Asian or just Oriental vibe people. It's wild.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so there's definitely some of that.
Yeah, and when I was first reading about it, I expected a lot of what I read and saw in The King and I to be very, like, traditional thinking, just based on when it came out. I didn't expect it to quite be known for being, yeah, like, this feminist thing or talking about race or slavery. Like, I didn't expect it to be touching on so many topics in, like, progressive ways as it did. Mm-hmm. I definitely expected it. Just because I had no memory of it, and I assumed it was just going to be, like, this really wonderful love story that's totally fictional. But then, yeah, to, like, read how they, yeah, took this super vague idea well, not vague idea, but this, like, really kind of, I think, like, the actual diary entries are pretty probably distant from, you know, the movie. But, yeah, they took this idea and turned it into, like, the, yeah, a really cool story, which, yeah, still is, has a lot of old ideas and thoughts in it, but it also, yeah, it touches on a lot of newer, yeah, progressive ideas, especially, yeah, for that time.
Mm-hmm. I think those were ideas that were important to Rodgers and Hammerstein. We'll probably talk way more about that when we get to South Pacific, because that's its own lyric. I remember there's a quote by Oscar Hammerstein that where he was talking about how anytime he goes to a theater anywhere in the world, doesn't matter where, doesn't matter the culture, doesn't matter the language, if he goes into a theater and sees a bunch of people in rehearsal or, you know, in the process of putting up a theater show, he understands them. He knows what that guy is going through. That guy knows what he's going to, like, they now have a piece of common ground, and that's kind of how he tried to view the world, where that, mm-hmm. like, there's a lot of, we have a lot of differences, but, like, in the world of theater, we're all the same kind of a thing. And they do a lot of work where different people from different cultures are coming together and trying to understand each other. And again, well, I don't want to save it for South Pacific because it's such a good thought, but one of the songs in South Pacific is, like, you've got to be carefully taught, like, from the time you're young, to hate all the people your relatives hate, and people whose eyes are differently made, and people whose skin is a different shade. And, like, right. like those kind of ideas are permeated in a lot of their works, like, from The Sound of Music to people who are like, you know, yeah. maybe we don't need to kill everybody who's different. Like, you know, maybe we don't need to join, like, the Nazis. And, you know, maybe, like, and again, in The King and I, like, maybe the West has something to learn from the East, and maybe the East has to learn something from the West. And one of the songs I love in King and I, even though I don't love the stereotyping of the broken English, like, I think that could be done with a little more nuance these days, but, like, right. the Is a Puzzlement song, where the King sings about, like, how conflicted he is in the changing world, and, like, sometimes I think the world's yeah. going mad. Sometimes I think people aren't so bad. Sometimes I want to trust other nations and build allies. And sometimes I worry that if I build too many allies, they will, like, steal everything from me. And, like, I, you know, yeah. like, just the world is changing and I am doing my best. Like, I think that's so relatable.
Yeah. Yeah. Relatable to any person. And, I mean, especially at that time. I mean, yeah, with England having their hold on lots of things, and I don't know,
yeah,
very interesting ideas to talk about and bring up.
Yeah. And again, this play was, you know, produced in the 50s,
yeah,
like, just after World War II, so this would have probably been about when they started breaking up some of the colonial empire-ness that had happened earlier, but, like, we're still only just breaking out of that idea that, like, the West, the white people need to civilize the world kind of mentality. Like, mm-hmm. that's still a new thought in the world in the 1950s. So, like, it's very interesting to have a play about, like, a king that wants to keep his independence and prove, like, that he, as a Siamese gentleman, can stand with the rest of the nations, like, and succeeds, basically.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
So, this might be me being just super dumb, but, like, no. Siam is now Thailand, right?
Yeah.
Is that correct? Yeah. So, that's considered, like, Asia, right?
Yep.
So, something that I think is interesting is, like, World War II, I think, brought a lot of racism out against Japanese people.
Yes.
And just, you know, Asian.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, very few Americans know the difference between any
Right, Asian, the, you know, the Asians, like, that we were allied with and the Asians we weren't.
Right. And so to me, it was just interesting that, yeah, like, I mean, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years seems like a long time. But when it comes to something like racism, that's not very long. And so it is kind of interesting that, yeah, they were like, let's make this huge blockbuster about an Asian king. And we're going to like him. And we're going to be, he's going to be a good guy.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. And even with all his flaws, we're going to end this movie loving him to death and crying when he dies and saying he did his best to be a good king. And, and we're even going to cast a person who has some Mongolian ancestry, some vague Asian ancestry, like, because I don't know if you've seen clips of every play or movie before Yul Brynner that based on these novels, because there were other other plays and other movies based on Anna and the King, that book.
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone else who...
If you see a clip of that, like, it almost shocks you, because those kings are definitely white. White. And, like, often speaking with, like, a British or a Bostonian type accent, it's wild. It's like, oh, they actually they stereotyped him, like, a lot, but they...
Right.
But again...
But there was some effort put in.
Yeah. Like, it's just, it's like...
Well, I know he wasn't their first choice, but...
But he nailed the audition.
Yeah, he did good. they still went with him. So, yeah.
Yeah. It is, like, I kind of want to point out, like, again, this was kind of based off of a real woman's kind of diaries, but the King of Siam that this movie, like, they only say his name once, but Mongkut, was a real king, and I do believe a lot of Thailand kind of has mixed feelings about this movie, like, because not only does it not represent them maybe in the way they'd represent themselves, but so he was a beloved king.
It's banned in Thailand.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, so, makes sense, because again, they loved this king and his son, because I think that, like, the King Mongkut, like, made a lot of changes to his country and, like, did a lot for the people, and then, like, his son went on to, like, end slavery. And so, like, that's interesting to hear it's banned. Like, I believe it.
Well, I know there were, there's lots of things that obviously are changed in the movie a bit. I know there, I read something about, like, the slavery aspect that they talk about. Like, he had slaves, but weren't they, like, really his wives or something like that?
Probably kind of in the way that, through a lot of history.
But, like, in real life, they... His wives also had, like, there was just lots of slavery going on.
Yeah, it was just common.
Yeah, and I don't know, but yeah, how it's depicted in the movie, I know, is different than how the real, like, who was actually slaves and who had slaves and all of that was a bit different in reality. But
yeah, I imagine there's a lot of nuance that I'm just not educated enough on that to really.
And I'm sure having someone beloved like that kind of having it seem like it's being reduced to just like some frilly love story is kind of like a slap in the face.
And having him, like, as much as he is the good guy, and again, we end up loving him, he also is painted as the more ridiculous one. Like,
right.
Yeah, like, we're usually poking fun at his,
Yeah, she came to help them.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I am not Taiwanese or any, I have no idea what it would be like to see your history displayed in some way like that. Also so loosely, like, it's just so, it would be interesting to read those diary. I mean, knowing that she lied about her actual ethnicity, though, too, makes me curious about what her diaries, like, you know, what else may have been, like, exaggerated.
Right, yeah, like, were these diaries written specifically, like, just for her, or were they written to, like, get money after the fact, to be published, or how much were they edited for that? It'd be interesting to know, for sure.
Obviously, they were interesting enough that someone wrote a book about them, and then, someone wrote a play about it, and then someone made a movie about it, or a musical about it, and then made a movie.
Right.
So, Or wait, no, it was movie, then musical.
No, musical.
Broadway musical.
Broadway musical, then movie. Well, musical. Oh wait, movie. No, you're right. There were made a stage play and a movie, and then made another stage play and another movie, and then made an
that was musical now,
and then a TV show pilot that thankfully never went anywhere because it's awful.
Right, and then the animated series or the animated film,
and then the film Anna and the King with is it Jodie Foster, and the little boy who played Draco Malfoy.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen that one either, but yeah, lots of, I'm sure there's a lot of variation between all of them.
Right, yeah.
I mean, my favorite is the addition of magic in the animated one, I've got to say.
That sounds, I know I've seen it. I don't remember that, but I'm sure it's wild.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, just, yeah, the first 5 minutes instantly, I was like, okay, guys, I don't know if I'm going to show this to my kids, because yeah, it's just instantly Oh, what's the movie? Have you seen the Lady and the Tramp lately?
Not in a while.
Okay. Well, I've seen it lately.
Okay. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's Lady and the Tramp. And there's the cat.
Oh yes.
We are.
Oh Siamese. Gosh. Yeah.
Pretty much that same.
That vibe. Oh dear. Oh dear.
In a 1999 animated film.
I feel like we should have known better, but we clearly didn't.
Right. At least the Lady and the Tramp is what, 60s or 70s or something. But anyways, just funny. All you can do is laugh at it now, or cry. One of the two.
If I have a closing thought, it's this quote by a Rogers biographer, Meryl Seacrest. The King and I is really a celebration of love in all its guises. For the love of Anna for her dead husband, the love of the King's official wife, Lady Tiang, for a man she knows is flawed and also unfaithful, the desperation of the forbidden love, and a love that is barely recognized and can never be acted upon. And I would extend that to love of country, love of a father and son, love of a son for his teacher, love of the teacher for her students. I think that there's a lot of learning to love in this movie, learning to love cultures you don't understand, learning to love yourself, learning to know your beliefs and love them and love the people around you and want to affect change. And I think ultimately, The King and I is one of those things that, for all its problems, I'm glad it's in the world, both so we can, teach the controversy, but also because it is attempting to, put good into the world.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's great. And, yeah, I'll have to... I tried to watch it while we were researching for it and stuff, but I couldn't find it on any streaming thing. Maybe I'm just not good at Googling things as I thought I was, but yeah, I definitely want to watch it again. I probably did watch it when I was a child, but yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to watch it now, knowing a lot more of the history behind it and yeah, how the people who first saw it were thinking and feeling about it.
Yeah.
It'll just add a lot of, context to what I'm seeing now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm excited to find a copy somewhere.
Maybe next time I visit you, I'll bring mine.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I even checked, my local library, and they didn't have a copy. Uh-huh. And I was like, well,
interesting. All right.
Maybe it's banned. Just kidding. But...
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Whatever you feel like watching, whether it's The King and I or Captain Planet, definitely go into it with a critical eye and just don't necessarily expect it to be the end all be all to what it's trying to teach you, but be open to the good things it is trying to teach you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both were influential in their own ways. Maybe not influential now in a modern day, but yeah, let us know if you have any memories from either or, yeah, impactful things from them that you experienced that we didn't touch on or anything like that. We'd love to hear it and to learn more. Mm.
You can find us to share all of your thoughts and memories and favorite episodes or songs at wedidntstartthepodcast.podbean.com. Until next time,
I'm trying to remember. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Anne. I don't know what I'm doing. We're, what, 5 episodes into this?
Yeah, I don't know. We're still figuring it out. We're still new to this.
New? And I ran a Pokemon podcast for 12 years. Oh, okay. Like, why do I not know what I'm doing?
It's fine. We're all learning. That's the biggest thing.
Yes.
We're all growing.
We're all learning, and whether we're learning or not, that fire will still go on and on and on and on.
Oh my gosh, yes. And yeah, we'll hit you up with some new fires and new topics on the next episode.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Oh my gosh, I failed.